Are you being tested to the limit? Do you find yourself exhausted from it, even questioning whether you can survive or how long you can stick it out? Hebrews chapter 4 contains both an exhortation and a promise. Let us be sure that we do not neglect the exhortation so that we do not miss the promise. It is written, "Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace," there's the exhortation, "that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." There's the promise. Psalm 6 is an excellent pattern to follow when you need to make use of this exhortation and promise that's found in Hebrews chapter 4. You know, Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet, but there are many psalms, like the 6th psalm, that show David to be the weeping king. This psalm, Psalm 6, was written with tears, sorrow, anguish of soul, and uncertainty about the Lord's presence, but with total faith in the Lord. I want to start off by reading the preface that you'll see right before verse 1, and then I'll read verse 1. Here is Psalm 6, how it starts. "To the chief musician with stringed instruments on an 8-string harp, Psalm of David. O Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger, nor chasten me in your hot displeasure." Now, I wanted to read that preface because I think it's very interesting. There is something found here that fits the tone of the psalm. Now, literally after it says, "on an 8-stringed harp," some of your translations might have that in the Hebrew, the word there is shemitah, which means the lowest of the three keys of the human voice, an octave or an eighth below the treble, the bass that is sung by the men. So in other words, when this was sung by the ancient Hebrews, they wanted it to have the bass sounds of the men, of the bass singers. Because I believe that it fits very appropriately with the way this psalm is. The first 7 verses are sad and sorrow-filled. But then in the last 3 verses, David is triumphant once again, as he often is in the psalms. It is common, it is typical for him to start out with something sad, something depressing. But as he pours his heart out to God, he then finds strength and boldness, and he finds that he is on top of the situation once again. While David had problems from without, in this particular case, he recognized that it was also from his own sin. Therefore, by implication, he acknowledges his sin and the punishment for it. But he wants God's mercy in the matter. He had enemies as a result of his sin, and he wants them removed. When in such trouble, or any trouble, seek help from God. If we do not seek His mercy, as David is doing in this psalm, we will be out of touch with our only hope and only help. Now in verse 2, there's a plea for mercy for his health. "Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are troubled." His inward distress caused physical ailments. Knowing God's displeasure and how his sin offended God, David was shaken to his bones. And when he speaks of his trouble here, the Hebrew word that he's using is describing like a plant drooping because of a drought. That's how he felt. I mean, dried up. His acute distress was paralyzing his body. Now, you know, if we go to the doctor because we have a serious problem, and he says, now here's what you need to do. You run these tests. And you may have to take this medicine, you might have to have this surgery. But if you don't, you'll die. So we elect to do what the doctor said, even though it's uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. Well, in the same way, when we go to the great physician, we may not always like what he prescribes, but take it. Knowing that it will help. That's what David is showing us here. I am in trouble. I have hot displeasure from God, but I don't want it. Please help me, O God. And you can see his repentance and his plea for God's help. But now, in verses 3 and 4, he makes a plea for mercy for his soul. My soul also is greatly troubled. But you, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, deliver me. O save me for your mercy's sake. A soul in trouble is the soul of trouble. In verse 2, his bones were troubled. But now he reveals that his soul was troubled. That is, that it was greatly troubled. You know, if your bones are bad, if your body is bad, but your spirit is good, your spirit is firm, then it's not quite so bad. You can make it through the affliction. But what happens when both your bones and your soul are troubled? What do you do then? When your soul is tormented, so is your body, which in turn torments your soul. It's a vicious cycle. Then what happens to your motivation and your energy? It's like wax before fire. The book of Proverbs makes an interesting connection between the soul and the body. Let me give you just two passages. The first one from the 15th chapter of the book of Proverbs. In verse 13, I want you to hear the last half of this verse. I'll read the whole verse. A merry heart makes a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is born. And then two chapters later, chapter 17, verse 22. A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the Now, Solomon, the son of David, is the one who wrote those words. And I wonder if he saw his father, David, experience the second half of each of those problems. Maybe Solomon did himself, but he could at least see it in his father and see the torment that that man went through as his soul was troubled and then how it would afflict his body. Also listen to Job chapter 30. In Job 30, the poor man Job, after all his suffering that he is experiencing, he relates some interesting words here. And see if you can relate to what he's saying. Job 30, starting in verse 16. And now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of affliction take hold of me. My bones are pierced in me at night. And my gnawing pains take no rest. By great force my garment is disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. He has cast me into the fire. I have become like dust. I cry out to you, that is to you, God, but you do not answer me. I stand up in your regard. But you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success. For I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for all. Poor Job. Thought that God was the one who was afflicting him with all his troubles. So he just pours his soul out to God. Because his soul and his body both break the trouble. And look back to Psalm 6. A great man like David was troubled. A great man like David had trouble living life. Even he wondered if and when God would help. How long before you help, O God? What has to happen? That's what he's saying. Is there something that I'm supposed to be learning here? Am I hanging on to something that I should be letting go of? Why does God delay? Many people in the Scriptures have wondered that, and I'm sure many of us have too. Why does God delay? Well, think of Joseph in that ancient Egyptian prison cell. Totally innocent. Why was he there? And why wouldn't God deliver him? Well, if God had delivered him in the very beginning, he probably would have gone into some other line of work other than the government that he ended up in, and thus was able to help his family. God had a reason for keeping him there, though he could not see. Now look back here at Psalm 6 and verse 3, at the end of verse 3. And just look at David's words carefully. It sounds as though he did not complete his thought. This man is really troubled. He's vexed deeply. And he just, but you, O Lord, and then you can see that dash there, because the translators are trying to get across the idea that it's as though David lost his thought there. He didn't complete his words. I don't know what else to say. How long, God? The trouble is so deep and so vexing that he loses his words and simply just wants to know how long is this going to last. When trouble comes, it often seems as though it shall never end. Again, in this case, David had sinned, and evidently these enemies were the consequence of that. So he wondered, how long is this going to last? These people are going to be persecuting me. How long do I have to endure? How long can I suffer? How long before relief comes? Do you see how that God gave these songs to us to show us that he understands our agony and how we feel? I'm sure as we go through this song, you can see parts of it, if not the entire thing. Or see yourself in how you can easily utter the same words. Now I want you to notice verses 5 to 7, the intensity of his plea. He begins in verse 5 by saying, "For in death there is no remembrance of you. In the grave, who will give you thanks?" You see, David loved to tell others about God. He enjoyed doing that. But in death, he could not do this anymore. I mean, when was the last time you drove by a cemetery and heard praises being sung? It just doesn't happen. Because the people there are dead. Their bodies are in the ground. And David didn't want to be like that. Now, he's not addressing here the state of the dead. He is just speaking about looking at his life and death from this world. If I'm dead, God, I can no longer praise you. As I have devoted my entire life to doing. Look at his emotional experience in verse 6. I am weary with my groaning. All night I make my bed sweat. I drench my couch with my tears. Man, a man of God like David did not hesitate to express his emotion, knowing the depth of the situation. But here's a man who can kill a giant, kill a bear, kill a lion, and defeat who knows how many other enemies. Yet here he is, dejected, cast down, and deeply depressed. He's sobbing, sighing, and weeping as though he's a child. Well, here's the difference. When men or beasts were his opposition, he was more than a conqueror. But when God was opposed, he melted before God, as he knew he was not. So he says his groaning was wearing him out. He couldn't sleep at night. Or when he did, and he woke up during the night, his first thoughts were of all the trouble. It was persecuted. Groaning because of troubles wears out the body, though, more than hard physical labor does. You know, working hard doesn't tire your soul. But groaning in the spirit because of the agony of troubles wears out both soul and body. This poor man just seemed to be crying. Verse 7 now, he even says he was just wasting away. My eye wastes away because of grief. It grows old because of all my weakness. The eye wasted away from care, anxiety, and sorrow. Does not the trouble within show up in our faces? More specifically, our eyes. By the way, why do we have troubles like this if we are children of God? Well, let me ask you a few questions. Did pirates attack vessels that had nothing on them? Do dogs bark at parked cars? Does one complain of a spot on a dirt clod? Do we complain, or do we not complain of a carbon spot on a diamond? Do we not complain of an ink blot on a wedding dress? Likewise, spiritual pirates attack those who are full of the riches of God. Spiritual dogs bark at those who are on the move. People criticize you because you're a diamond. They see a carbon spot, that's all they can see. Your critics see you like a beautiful wedding dress, but all they can see is that ink. Well, now the psalm takes a dramatic turn. Verses 8 and 10. The plea is answered. Look at verse 8. Depart from me, all you workers of iniquity, for the Lord has heard the voice of my weeping. David found peace. He's been down on his knees praying to God. And now he finds peace and he arises from his prayer and he tells his persecutors to be away. Get out of my life. You also pour out your heart to God using Psalm 6 as a model, and God shall hear you and help you to take care of trouble. Again, verse 8, along with verse 9, it says, depart from me, all you workers of iniquity, for the Lord has heard the voice of my weeping. The Lord has heard my supplication. The Lord will receive my prayer. What David employed here is what's known as Hebrew parallelism. It's a form of Hebrew poetry where they rhymed in thought. You know, we like to rhyme in words. They rhymed in thought. And at the end of verse 3, he gives a statement. The Lord has heard the voice of my weeping. And he parallels it with another thought, starting in verse 9. The Lord has heard my supplication. He's not saying two different things. They're just the same thing, only in different words. And because the Lord has heard, he knows that whatever future petitions he offers, as it says in verse 9, God is going to hear those voices. God has heard. David now had confidence that God heard. Now look there at the end of verse 8. The voice of his weeping. You see, David was speaking words from both his lips and his eyes. Because weeping is prayer liquefied. Sound travels further or farther upon water than land. So prayer travels farther, clear to heaven, when upon tears. Excuse me. Tears are like flowing pearls. Both are made from affliction and irritation. And both are valuable. Even as you are touched by tears, so is our Heavenly Father. Weeping, it has been said, is the speaking eloquence of sorrow. When one is weeping, especially before God, it's like a great orator speaking, and no interpretation is needed. God understands precisely what is being said. Are you not glad that during those times when you don't know what to say to God, but he can see the trouble of your soul as you're trying to express yourself to him, that he understands and he sees and he considers and then he moves into action to take care of you? Now, maybe you might be thinking, well, I'm just not the weeping kind of person. That's fine. Whatever sorrow we may have on the inside is what's needed most. As long as it moves us away from sin and toward God, or even if we haven't sinned in the case, if it's moving us toward God, that's what he wants. He wants to see a broken heart. On the other hand, if someone else who does express themselves in tears, we certainly should not forbid them. Martin Luther said this about prayer. Prayer is the leech of the soul that sucks out the venom and swelling thereof. Never thought of prayer as a leech. That's what it is, isn't it? I've got this trouble in me, and prayer is just sucking it out and giving it to God. Let him deal with it. Let him handle it. Three times David says with confidence that God heard his prayer. So now let's see how he ends in verse 10. Let all my enemies be ashamed and greatly troubled. Let them turn back and be ashamed suddenly. Listen to what he just said. And look back at verses 2 and 3. David said he was the one who was troubled. And so in verse 4, he begs for God to turn to him. Now in verse 10, he says, let my enemies be troubled, and let them turn from me. See how everything's changed? The progression of this psalm teaches us how to handle our troubles. If sin is at the root, repent of it. Seek God's mercy and have victory. But even if sin is not the root, still seek God's mercy and enjoy the victory that will come afterwards. Do not struggle alone. Seek God's help through Christ and His church. We want to pray for you. We want to go to the throne of grace during your time of need, that you may receive mercy and grace to find help. We do that for you this morning? Or maybe you just need to be able to be presented before God's throne by becoming a child of God in the first place. Do you believe with all your heart that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? If you do, are you willing to turn from all your sin? If you say yes to that one, are you ready then to commit your life to Christ? if so, we need to bury you. You're now dead. You're dead in sin. And dead people need to be buried. But when we bury you, we won't leave you under. We'll bring you up. And of course, I'm talking about water in the baptistry that's right behind you. We can bury you in the water, bring you back up. You're a dead person when you went down, but you'll come up alive, ready to walk in newness of life. If we can help you with either one of those things, come forward right now and stand and sing.